Good afternoon, everybody. For those of you who are just joining, my name is Sarah and I'll be the moderator for today. Our topic today is, can viral videos drive targeted traffic to your website? Okay, I'd like to now introduce Dr. Flint McLaughlin, who will be leading this call.
Okay, Sarah, thank you very much. And we're going to get started right away. We have quite a bit of content to cover. I'll be joined by several of our key staff members, including Jalali Hartman, who oversaw and is currently overseeing a major video project with us. And I think the topic's already been announced. We're talking about viral video. And there are millions of short video clips on the web produced both by professionals and amateurs. And the amateurs publish their video clips for fun and notoriety, and the professionals produce and publish them in order to drive traffic to their websites and to sell more of their products or services. And we're familiar with this, and the phenomena with YouTube and Google Video has, I think, captured everyone's attention. But there is a question on the minds of marketers, and that is, how do we ride this wave? What is it that we can do in order to take advantage of the video opportunity for the sake of our own marketing objectives and goals? Obviously, the television networks are deeply concerned. The Internet has moved into a new phase, and in that phase, it's finally truly able to deliver video style entertainment. I think for a long time, there was people trying to use the Internet to do things for which it was not capable of doing, and we often were able to optimize processes, improve conversion by reducing the complexity of the multimedia offering on the net, by simplifying, by eliminating, in many cases, Flash. Most of you recall in the early days, Flash was, you know, excited and every designer wanted to use it, and most of the time it got in the way of conversion. And I think eventually people began to think about and discover how they could use it to do tutorials and product samples to some extent with some success. But I often was able to achieve improvements in results by cutting away the superfluous use of video and audio in the typical over-designed website. That is changing. In fact, some years ago, we foresaw this day was coming. I was on the Internet personally, and this isn't in my notes, but I'll just share it with you. Back in the days when it was Unix, I was typing in gopher strings and going to BBS and bulletin boards, and no one had ever heard of Netscape. And of course, there was no Explorer or online or Internet Explorer. And really, everything changed, but I sensed in those days that the Internet was going to become a major distribution outlet. It's one of the reasons we eventually founded the lab. I thought that content would be essential. I thought that distribution would be essential. And so I actually began to build capacities and conduct research in both areas. And we produced a lot of television programming with CBS and Fox. And some of you may have seen on our website that we did work in with Danny Glover, who hosted a show called Extreme Courage. And we had a partnership with Don Johnson Productions and just different things that we learned. But I can tell you that along the way, I kept thinking to myself, I am only here in this town for one reason. I want to understand this content. I am not here so that for the rest of my life I can be held hostage to two or three television networks and a handful of cable outlets. There were many cable stations, but only a few that really mattered. There was the Discovery Channel with Steve Burns over there, and there was, you know, the History Channel. At that point, it was still minor, but A&E Network was coming on strong, and Michael Cassio was the key guy buying programming there. And I looked all around the marketplace, and I just said, you're going to be held hostage here. But the day will come when distribution will somehow overcome these limitations, and this concentration of power is going to change. And when it does, it's going to impact everything. So we stayed in California. We produced a lot of programming. We won some pretty significant awards, thankfully, and then we went right back and focused on the distribution piece, which we've been doing for several years with our research, some of you know from reading the journal issues. It's almost hard for me to believe that we are at a different point now. I have longed for the time when bandwidth would allow us to truly use video in the way that it could enable the Internet experience. I've watched people get excited and move too fast and do things they shouldn't do. And finally, I've seen it come, I think, really, and what seems to me, it feels like overnight, video has completely revolutionized the experience for many people on the Internet. And I certainly didn't foresee the impact of podcasting and the concept of the iPod. We thought that perhaps there would be a means to distribute in a personal, some form of carrying content with you that would personalize the experience, but no one could have foreseen what was going to happen at Apple. In those days, I didn't think Steve Jobs would ever be back at Apple. Everything has changed, and we have begun a major project researching those applications for us today. Those that are concerned about distribution and marketing. And we have a person who works in our staff named Jolly Hartman. He's brilliant. Built a large internet group before he began to do research with us. Frankly, he still owns a stake in that internet group and is conducting research with us constantly because he's deeply interested in this in the content. He's deeply interested in the concept of research. And honestly, I think he's unusually gifted. And he's overseen this project, and he's going to be talking through the beginning of some of these slides. I'm going to let him just pick up and take off, and we'll probably interact together. I open this up, by the way, for any of my other staff members that feel like they have something to add that have worked on these projects. There's several of us on the line, a number of our key analysts. But Jalali, let me turn this over to you, and you can continue.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. First of all, this is one of the more fun research projects I've done, just from the perspective of the fact that we're dealing with almost an entirely new media. What video is doing just for us as marketers and just as users of the internet in general is it really adds a new dimension to the internet. Whereas before it was two-dimensional with graphics and text, we now have this new media that we can use to be entertained and to help understand information and more quickly absorb information. And personally, this is a personal preference. I prefer to watch a video rather than read something online. I'll probably watch 6 or 8 videos, news, and different types of things when I come in the morning. So anyway.
Jalali?
Yes.
People are asking if you could please speak up a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's the volume on that? Is that any better?
Seems pretty clear to me, Jalali. Just to speak reasonably loud, and I'll listen carefully and let you know if I hear any feedback issues, too. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, if we look at, and a lot of you have probably started on the Internet 10 or 15 years ago when it sort of emerged as a marketing channel, essentially if we look at the evolution from when we first started, everything was free, natural search was I remember days when you could actually instantly go to the top of a natural search engine, within a day or two and start getting tons of traffic. What happens was it sort of evolved with all of the venture capital and people got a little bit more serious. Paid search became a way, whereas natural search was really competitive. ROI was more important to people. User-driven content became popular with the dot-com burst. People stopped offering everything for free, and as marketers, we had to get a little bit more serious about what we're doing. And now we're sort of in an era where search, paid search and natural search is almost a commodity. If you're not doing that well, you need to start doing that well pretty quickly. We're finding that testing is marketing. That's sort of the same thing. ROI is really driving the marketing. Nothing is free. Spam's pretty much gone or it's not really effective. And two of the things that I think we were talking about when we first started is that viral marketing is now, really one of the most powerful ways to market online. We're going to talk a little bit about social marketing, but really it's what the internet was designed for, and multimedia is mainstream, and that's really primarily because of the adoption of broadband. So Mike, can you go to the next slide? I just wanted to give a little bit of background on why we decided to do this research in the first place and then get into the actual research. So I'm sure a lot of you have seen broadband adoption at home is growing. Depending on what the report you look at, we see that 40 to 50% of the houses in the U.S. have broadband, and we're starting to see that sort of trend across the world in some of the more developed nations. If you go to the next one, you'll see that at work, I like to say it's now much easier to waste time at work. We can almost watch TV at work, and I know that a lot of people previously had been using work for like instant messaging, that type of thing. Now we have something more that we can Mike, so if you just go to the next slide. So we're at, some of the numbers we're looking at right now, it's anywhere between 80 to 90% adoption at workplaces for broadband. Go to the next slide, Mike. This was an interesting thing. If we look at sort of media use of people's time, this was a study that Omnicom put out in September 2006, and essentially they took an average U.S. family. I don't know the exact size of the family, but they broke it down to what that family spends their time doing each day. And what we've seen recently is sort of a switch from watching television to be one of the the largest, extracurricular activity to now recreational internet surfing and online chat. And this is important because of the, one of the reasons it's important is it's sort of already reaching levels of 1 billion people online. It's reaching levels in less than a decade that it took almost, it took like 50 or 60 years for TV to get to. And so we're starting to see this inflection of people, they now have another screen in their homes to watch, and the internet is really has passed TV in the U.S. and in Europe and different places, and it sort of changes the way as advertisers we think about this. So if you just go to the next slide, Mike. I put this in here because everybody's probably heard about the YouTube acquisition. After 1 year of being in business, they were acquired for $1.65 billion or something along those lines by Google. And what I wanted to point out in this is that you look at what I've graphed is over the last year, MySpace, CNN.com, and eBay, and you can see the blue line is YouTube. So starting from zero, about a year ago, is now getting more traffic than any of those properties, and that is primarily due to we're gonna see in a chart just in our own video the growth that this type of stuff has in terms of people passing these things around to people. And if you go to the next slide, Mike. So we actually had there's two parts to this research, and this is we're answering sort of the two questions in this. First is, how can viral videos be used by marketers to drive traffic to a website? So essentially, whereas you have a lot of individuals out there who have created little videos and they're getting viewed millions of times. I think the question commercially is, is there an application for that? Yeah, YouTube gets a lot of traffic, but can we use that as marketers? Is there a real potential out there to drive traffic? The second part of this that we're not going to get into is, how can you use video to increase conversion or to sell a product or service? And we'll be talking about it a little later. But essentially, there's millions of these short video clips out on the web. Some of them are professionals, some of them are amateurs, some of them are professionals who are pretending to be amateurs. But essentially, they publish the video clips for fun and put them, distribute them out to these sites: Google Video, YouTube, Yahoo Video, MSN, Soapbox, MySpace. And what's happening is just tens of millions of people are watching these videos each day. And we're interested primarily in, could we do this? Could we go out there, sort of, intentionally create viral videos and use it to drive traffic back to a website? So, if you go to the next slide, Mike.
Joel, I may jump in on portions of this, but as you're going through, as we're getting into the main experiment itself, because of my interest here. But you keep going.
Okay. So, just sort of, I want to set the experiment up. What we did for this first part of the project was we created 28 videos ranging in length from 15 seconds to 8 minutes. Each video had a short promotion at the end of it, so something basically that said, here's a URL where you can see more videos like this, or join, or buy, or visit our website. We went out intentionally and tried to produce this on the lowest possible budget. We acquired not a professional camera, but sort of a prosumer video camera with an external mic. You could probably do the same type of production with your standard camcorder. We purchased off-the-shelf video editing software for a PC, and then went out and started filming and just, you know, basically editing all of this stuff ourselves. Total estimated investment in this project for all 28 videos was $9,600.
Now, can I just, Jelani, I want to comment on that and just point out something. We produced, you know, for the networks in California, and my typical camera cost there for a Betacam were, you know, upwards of $150,000. You could spend over $200,000. An Avid editor suite, again, $75,000 just to get into the game. I cannot believe how minimal budget is these days, and I point it out because this changes the dynamics of the opportunity. It gives you ways to test. It sounds like producing 28 videos was a difficult thing. It was done over how long a period of time, Jelani? Well, 120 hours.
Yeah, it was approximately 30 days.
And so you do 120 hours of filming and post-production. You spend $9,600 on equipment and additional costs. And the next thing you know, you have these videos out there working for you. The question becomes, number one, what's the impact of that? But number two, I want to point out that anything like this a few years ago would have cost you, I mean, 1 hour of television, your budget's over $1.5 to $2 million. So, and the difference is, it's not just the talent, the editorial, all of these things are so expensive. And these videos are amateur. We've produced professional quality videos, but even the amateur grade is remarkably clean and crisp in terms of the resolution, etc. Of course, the internet makes things simpler because of its resolution limitations. Go ahead, Jelani.
Okay, if you go ahead and next slide, Mike. Okay, so just again going into the actual experiment itself, the videos that we shot were on a variety of different topics. They were primarily either comedy or some sort of spoof on some existing video that was out there, or they had to do with today's social, economic, political issues. So they were, it's more like a personal blog type, you know, getting people's opinions on things, that type of thing. And they were almost entirely just filmed and or shot with using like amateur actors. There was no professional actors or anything like that. We did have one case while we were out shooting where we actually ran into a professional musician, Ben Harper. That was completely random, and actually, if you're thinking that video sort of skews the results we're going to look at, that video is actually getting seen less than some of our more, you know, generic videos. But essentially what we did is we uploaded these 28 videos to YouTube and Google Video, which are two of the main places where you can host and distribute viral videos or videos that you've made. And there's, if you haven't done that, essentially it's pretty straightforward. You upload it, and then you can place, embed a URL next to the video people can click, and that's how we're, that's how we generate traffic back to our site. So if you go to the next page.
That's energy, energy.
Okay, so essentially what we found was that, essentially these videos, what we found is that the videos generated a considerable amount of traffic per video and a considerable amount of traffic back to our website. But what we did was all the videos were amateur on purpose. We didn't do anything overly professional. They're all humorous or related to current world events. And then we started this, I guess, in the first part of August, and have kept them running through October. And you can see samples, of videos that we did actually on our blog, marketingexperimentsblog.com. Go to the next slide, Mike. And this is what we found. And Flint, you may want to comment on some of this, but essentially, just to summarize this, the growth of this. So we created these videos and we've done nothing since. We uploaded them and created them and uploaded and put them on these two different sites. And as you can see in August, all the videos generated 88,000 views. So in September, 235,000 views. And then in October, which just ended, we had just as many views in October as we did in August and September combined. And then November is on the same path. So if you sort of extrapolate this out, what's happening is with no additional work, no additional production costs, these videos are out there. They're growing in popularity. October, they more than doubled what they did the two previous months before. Now, if you look at the next row of this clicks through to the site, you see that we're getting roughly 1.3% of people who watch these videos are clicking through. So over the period of 120 days, we're projected to do 1.2 million views on our videos, minimal investment, and essentially we've created a marketing network that seems to be growing exponentially. There is no additional work involved or cost involved.
And I want to just comment on this. I'm sure many of you have questions about this. You can keep sending your questions. In a few moments, we're going to start to take answers. Staff members are already trying to keep up with the questions. There are hundreds of people on this phone call. But in case it's not clear, and I think Jorley's presented it very well, what's remarkable here, and he'll talk about the click-through rate and its comparison in a second, but please note this. A $9,600 investment translating into 1.2 million views over a 120-day period, and it's continuing to grow exponentially. What will it do in the 120-day period thereafter? We can't even project it yet. We're testing it. We've been able to give you solid projections for November, but we're wanting to see what happens during the holiday season, what it looks in January and February, and this is without adding a new layer each month. If we were to spend the same $10,000 the second and the third month, how would this aggregate? Jalali, let me just ask you, because I know you were the analyst who oversaw this project, what surprised you the most in the process?
I think what surprised me is just the, first of all, the number of views that we got for such minimal investment. Some of these videos were literally, 5 seconds long, and they were getting 15 to 20,000 views in a day when they launched, and they were getting past, you could almost see them getting spread around the internet. The other thing that really surprised me was the click-through rate and just the fact that people were clicking through to the site, just the amount of sort of community that was built around these videos.
Show us that next slide and talk about that, Jalali.
Okay. So if you see the on this chart, and we can go ahead to the next one, we're averaging about a 1.28% click-through. So where I showed you before, next to the video on both YouTube and Google Video, you can actually put a URL back to your site. And we measured how many people clicked through off of those links. And what we did is we compared it to standard banner advertising click-throughs. So DoubleClick got a report where they said, the average click-through for a traditional 468 by 60 banner we generate about a 0.17% click-through. And if you look at that and compare that to our videos get a 1.28% click-through. So about 7.5 times the number of clicks in traditional banner advertising. And that would be impressive enough if we're just comparing like one campaign to another campaign. But the viral videos are growing. So it's not like banner advertising where we bought a certain amount of traffic. They're actually growing. They're out there. We're continuing to get traffic from all over the world. Our sites are growing in traffic. It's just really kind of interesting to watch the spread of all of this.
It's remarkable. To all of you, I know that you've been thinking, along with other strategists that we have here working with our analysts, as to what the implications of this has for those of us that are trying to understand video as a component of a social media optimization strategy. Do you want to just continue to talk and move through some of the lessons that we're learning from that? Before you do, I want us to stop and take some questions, Jalali, but if you'll kind of be prepared, we're going to move there in just a moment. As the questions are coming in, let me just try to pick some of these and answer them for you, or have someone here that can answer them for you. Did you test out any Google Video ads? Is a question from Melissa. You want to comment on that, Jalali?
No, we have not tested any direct like video advertisements.
Okay. Do you anticipate a decline after some period of time in I know that this is a projection, and I have some thoughts on that, but I'd be interested in what you think, Jalali.
What we're seeing is a decline in individual videos.
Yes.
Some of them that had to do with, say, current events or things like that have definitely declined. We had a couple that had to do, they were spoofs on other popular videos at the time that were seeing a decline. But what we're seeing is this, and I can't quite understand or explain why it's happening. What we're seeing is an overall increase in total video views. So it's what's happened is I think both of these sites have ways for you to sort of subscribe to a particular, producer, that type of thing. And I think what's happening is one is getting passed around, and people are then going and watching multiple videos at the same time.
All right, well, Jalali, move on. We're moving through more questions, but go ahead and talk to us more about what you're learning from the standpoint of optimizing for social media strategy.
Okay, so Mike, if you go to the next slide, essentially what this boils down to is, the whole internet is really based around search. So you're either searching a marketplace or you're searching a search engine, you're searching a website for information, whether it's, and what this essentially does is, video becomes one of those mediums that people are searching, and you can optimize your video the same way that you would optimize your website for search or for browsing. The difference is that this involves something called social media optimization, which has more to do with how the community ranks your content than any kind of algorithm. So essentially, the important thing to understand here is that the users of this are determining what is the most popular, and that's why these sites are growing so quickly, and that's why literally a story just in the course of doing this, I ran across a artist, I think her name was Tara Naomi, and she was a musician. I saw her on YouTube. I ordered a CD. It came in a little envelope, looked like she had handwritten. A month later, I saw that she has a full album out, and has been on all kinds of different news specials, has an agent, that type of thing. If you think about it, there's never been a time like that where people could do that type of thing, and it's all because the community, all because essentially one person saw it, they liked it, they ranked it, and the next pass it on to the next person. So if you go to the next slide, Mike.
Jalali, what he's doing there, there's a question relevant to that slide I'm thinking about. Someone's asking, they're not clear. They said they thought that YouTube would be the big opportunity. Where else does it have to appear to get the huge exposure that we received and that we discussed in the earlier slides?
Well, to be completely honest with you, Google Video, we get almost double the views per video that we do on YouTube. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that videos show up in Google's main search engine, which is something that YouTube doesn't have. What we've seen in terms of rankings after YouTube and Google Video, you have MySpace, which has a pretty extensive video search database, and then you have Yahoo Video, which is a fairly new property, and then the newest one is MSN Soapbox, which just came out of beta. And so essentially all of those put together, it's like any other kind of, like all the other portals, like put together in terms of search. But Google definitely seems to be the most effective in terms of traffic right now.
Somebody's pointed out, and I think legitimately, that CTR is no longer a valid measuring unit for online retailers of products and services. I mean, to some extent, what really counts is how many CTRs actually paid money to buy something. And I think that's a reasonably valid point, but you must understand that in order to conduct the nature of this experiment, which is over multiple months and which will also be testing many aspects of conversion as they relate to actual purchases, this first phase we're releasing to you because we think it's significant enough that you may want to pay attention. The reality is it's still remarkable to aggregate this much traffic and to do so with such a small investment and to see it growing exponentially. As to how profitable this traffic will be, we need to conduct more tests, and we'll certainly be releasing more results from the tests that we are already involved with and that we are planning, and I hope that you'll find that information useful as you're thinking through your own strategy. There are other tests we're doing, too, that are connected to using video to improve conversion. In the old days, people thought that streaming audio actually was rather offensive, and in most cases it was if it came in and loudly interrupted a user, although we found tests that indicated it actually increased sales. That might increase sales but hurt the brand, and some of us need to be very cognizant of the difference between a sales gain and a marketing loss. But it sometimes could help, but in general, we recommended against it for what it did to your brand. And also, in many cases, it mitigated against conversion. People clicked off the site. Today, we need to ask ourselves, when people come to the site, does the audio interrupt the experience and begin talking with them along with video in some type of window, or is it an optional sell? And what can we do to improve conversion rates? Jalali and I were talking this past week about something that connects to this whole experiment, and that is that you go into a mall or a shopping store and your conversion is much higher. The average person that goes into the store buys something. Traffic may be more targeted. But are we settling for anemic conversion rates at 1% and half of 1% and 2% on the average landing page when there are ways that we should be converting at a much higher level? And we just have lowered our expectations based on our early failures. We've got some experiments with that connected to adding personality to the website through the use of video that we want to talk to you about in some future research. So more questions are coming in. Please know we're trying to answer them, but there are, I'm estimating, more than 100 coming at me right now, so we won't be able to answer all of them. If you've just joined us, this is a webinar, a web clinic with MEC Labs. I'm Flint McLaughlin, and Jalali Hartman is the Senior Analyst and Director of Strategy, and is overseeing a video research project, and we're asking him to comment on that project now. We've moved through the data of an initial test, very preliminary, but we still thought it would be worthwhile. Having moved through the data, we're talking about the implications for those of us who are thinking about SMO, or what people are calling social media optimization. Go ahead, Jalali.
Okay, well, in terms of social media optimization, we're actually trying to develop a formula that allows the marketer to sort of describe what goes into social media optimization. I know a lot of us, for me, I felt like I was just sort of starting to get the hang of search engine optimization. And now we have this new media that we have to understand, but there's actually a lot of similarities between optimizing for social media and optimizing for a search engine. But one of the things that we know is important and which makes social optimization so important is that it's easy, depending on how easy something is to pass around. Sort of determines how much viral growth you're going to get out of it. So, for example, one of the reasons the internet is so good for viral marketing is that forwarding an email is about the easiest thing you can do. And furthermore, if you receive a forwarded email from one of your friends or somebody that you know, you're very much more likely to open that and actually read it and take action on it. So what these sites have done, they've sort of built into their systems, are these ways for people to very easily distribute content or share content. If you go to the next slide, Mike, we'll take a look at an example of that. And I'm going to move through this so we can get to some of the questions. What you see on the right-hand side of your screen, first of all, is essentially it's a screenshot from a Google Video site. And you see there's this email, blog, post to MySpace button. And what that does is allows anybody to just literally with a click of a button automatically send a link to this video to their friend, which is where some of the spread comes from, to instantly add it to their blog. And there's a number, depending on which site you're on, it's compatible with like movable type or WordPress or that type of thing, and then post it to a MySpace account. So what happens is people are going around, they see something they like, and they can, first of all, rank it and sort of tag it themselves. And then second, post it to distribute it to their own community or add it to an additional website. And what happens is the popular videos get high rankings, are spread around, downloaded, and the next thing you know, you have just 1.2 million people watching 28 videos that you created for $9,600. The second part of this is you've probably seen this on a lot of blogs. You know, instant links. It's very similar to what like a Google video or YouTube is doing, where you can actually, you know, add this to a search engine or add it to a social networking site just with a click of a button. And so what's happening is the content that's out there on the web, if we go back to sort of like a web 1.0 where there really was no filtering, it was pretty much whoever could manipulate the search engines, the algorithm the best, get shown the most. It's changed now to whatever the community, whatever the world thinks is the best content sort of rises to the top, and it gets categorized and indexed by the community itself. So if you go to the next slide, Mike. So the voting and rating process is an integral part of almost of all of these social networking sites. YouTube is focused on short videos. Google has longer videos. Both of them have both professional and amateur content up there. But essentially, the way that their engines work is the ones that get watched the most, the ones that get the highest rankings, the ones that get the most comments, automatically rise to the top of those sites. So it's sort of it becomes almost a democratic process where the best content gets viewed the most, and that's where you get the viral growth. If you can get a video out there that starts getting watched and people like and they're or don't like in some cases, it doesn't really matter, and they automatically not only get passed around to other people through email and chat and different things like that, but they also sort of rise to the top of each of those sites. It's where you see, if you go to YouTube, you see the recently featured or the top 100 on Google, those types of things. So in other words, social media search is driven not by algorithms, but by popular vote. And it's just important that you understand this. There are definitely algorithms that go into it. For example, you can have different keywords in your titles. You can name the video certain things. You can tag the video certain ways so that it can be, you know, people can browse to it easily or find it easily. But essentially, it's what, you know, what people like the most gets watched the most. So if you go to the next slide, Mike. This is an example. This is a YouTube video that CBS put up there, and you're starting to see the different networks and particularly professional musicians and different people like that using these sites to build brand and build audience. But you see in the lower left of the screen, there's a couple different things. There's the rating system, so 1 through 5 rating. There's the ability to add it to your favorites. There's the ability to become part of a group with this type of video. You can easily post this video to your site or share it with your friends, like a list of friends. You can actually even flag a video as inappropriate. So if there's something that is, adult or just somehow not appropriate, users can actually sort of self-filter that stuff. It's based on this, like this video would get ranked on YouTube based on how many sites are linking into it, how many times it's been rated, how many times people have commented on it, and how many times it's been watched. So essentially, again, the audience is determining what is relevant content, which what it does is Flint talked earlier about being sort of held hostage by a couple of networks or television stations. What it does is it allows anybody that has, creative content to sort of rise to the top and get an extremely significant amount of, amount of visibility. So if you go to the next slide, Mike.
Somebody's asking, Jalali, about the 18 honors. There are 18 honors at the bottom of this video. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, what YouTube does is essentially honors just basically have to do with it shows how the video is doing in relation to all the other videos. So the honors in this case have to do with it might have been like the most viewed video in comedy that day, or it might be the most LinkedIn video. And again, that goes as far as I can tell, that goes into how YouTube displays their content. Things with the most honors, sort of. And so that's where the viral growth comes from. Is once you start to get some activity like that, it sort of builds on itself, and next thing you know, I've seen videos go from 0 to 1 million views in one day on YouTube. So if you, it really has to do with just this social,
yes,
algorithm.
Some of you have talked also about some volume issues, particularly with my microphone. We're on the same system, and we don't discern that. If that's still an issue or if it's better, would you please just drop me a quick note here? We're watching as you're chatting with us so that we can make this as comfortable for you as possible. I would point out that on the issue of conversion, one of our long-time readers, in fact, let me just see if I can pull this off, another one that we just talked with said that they did a video assist sales tool for a DR product, and they saw conversion rates increased by 180%. Now, I haven't seen the data on that. It points to a different angle on the video opportunity, not only for this viral spread and the opportunity to get click-through, but it's actual pure assist in the conversion process. Can I point out an experiment we're also getting ready to do? So we're looking both macro and micro. You know, we conduct primary research, and we're trying to understand these key elements. We're also going to be running an experiment. We use it during the order process in order to overcome any hurdles connected to people giving you their credit card. We think there's some fascinating data and opportunities there. I think, Jalali, just in the few minutes that we have remaining, we'll have to do this briskly, but you were going to talk about 5 or 6 key insights that we've gathered. Let me let you do that, and then if we have time, we're going to try to answer just a few more questions at the end. Go ahead.
Okay. Sure. Well, essentially, there's a couple of things to keep in mind that we know. We obviously haven't figured all of this out, and this is a very new way to market, but there's a couple of things we know. First thing is the shorter videos seem to be working better primarily because you really need people to make their way through the entire video before they're going to pass it on to someone else. I've seen people use a combination of short videos and then longer, more like feature-type videos once they've built an established audience. But essentially, to get that viral spread going, you need to keep something that's reasonably short that people can even keep their attention span. So the second step is basically ensuring that the video is interesting, entertaining, or provocative in some way. That's definitely one thing we're finding. You can absolutely use videos to like explain your product or service, to use to support your sales force and that type of thing. But if you're looking for viral spread, it should have something that either is making people laugh or cry or make them mad, or just sort of make them. And we honestly, some of the best videos that we've had, people absolutely hate it. They almost annoy people, and we get a lot of comments about, wow, I wish I could get this 30 seconds back in my life and that type of thing after watching it. But the thing about it is that they end up passing it to someone else regardless. So the next thing is sort of being careful, especially as marketers, about including commercial promotional content. No one likes, and we get a lot of comments like this, we get a lot of comments on this where people said, the worst thing on the internet is people trying to create a viral video or trying to pretend like they're someone else and get a lot of spread. So you have to, especially as marketers, and if you look at some of the ones that have been most successful, it's almost hard to tell that it's a real advertiser at first. I believe that it may change a little bit once people get more get more used to actually watching ads and that type of thing. But be real careful to keep it entertaining, keep the sales message out of it, and almost keep it a fun kind of thing. That the goal of this, the objective of a viral video is to get people to pass it around. It's not necessarily to sell the product right there. So if you go to the next slide, Mike. The next thing, obviously, is don't plan on creating just one video. The first probably 6 or 8 videos that we did, we honestly just about gave up on this because we were putting a lot of time into filming these and cutting them, and we thought they were funny or we thought they were entertaining, and absolutely nobody watched them. And we thought, well, what's the secret here? And then finally, one day we came into work and wanted one of the videos that literally we just made as a joke. One day before leaving work, got 35,000 views over the night, and so we, just after we sort of understood what went into making that one successful, you know, we learned a little bit about what to make next.
Can I point to that also? One of the things we're doing, as you know, if you know how we work at the lab, we conduct all this research and we build formulas, indexes that we use in our processes and growth engine and technology. And these formulas codify a process. And one of the things we've been building, which we want to share, and email me if you think you'd find this interesting, or not email me, but chat with us here. We've actually built a formula that more or less predicts the viral impact of a given product on the net. It's fairly elaborate, but not that difficult to understand. And I thought about teaching on one of these sessions and using this formula to help you understand. If you get this formula right, you'll understand how to turn something that's an opportunity into a magnified opportunity through viral impact, and it won't just be an accident. It'll be because you intentionally planned it that way. I think you'd find it fascinating. We're still fine-tuning it and testing it, but it may be one of the most important formulas that we've developed here. Go ahead, Jalali.
Okay. Well, just in terms of the formula, the last point of this sort of ties into that. I talked a little bit about what makes a good viral video or what makes a good viral campaign in general, and one of the key variables in that is how easy something is to pass around. And obviously, the internet just automatically sort of lends itself well to that. These social networking sites make it even easier. But the second piece of it that we're finding is how many people you're sort of priming the whole system with. So say, for example, you have a email list with 1 million people and you send out this viral video, and you're gonna naturally get more spread out of that because you're starting with 1 million people. One thing that we found with these videos that was kind of interesting that has definitely had a positive impact is actually including people in the videos themselves. We've done a lot of interviews, and every time we do an interview, a crowd gathers. People write down the address where they can go actually see themselves. What happens is they appear in it, and so they end up sending their friends, say, here's a video that I appeared in, and you sort of start to see the spread. There was a real creative thing that was done. I can't remember exactly who did it. It was where 100 people went into Home Depot, and at a sort of synchronized time, they all stopped moving. And somebody secretly filmed the whole thing. And so what happened was, obviously all the people that worked at Home Depot and all the other people that were there were sort of wondering what was going on. But those 100 people then left that place, excited about being a part of this, went and emailed all of their friends about this video they were in. And next thing you know, it was getting watched millions of times. So this is something just to think about if you guys are marketers, potentially using your customers, using that community to let them spread it around themselves. Definitely something that we're finding. So I think that's most of the points. If you want to go to the next slide, Mike. So finally, I think just sort of in conclusion, we have this new medium to work with. Broadband is finally at a place where you can serve video easily on your website or create small videos, short videos like this, and distribute them out to different places. And coupled with this new connectedness of all these social media networks, so YouTube's and Google and the MySpaces of the world, it really gives us an opportunity as marketers to generate a lot of awareness for our brand, for our products. The click-throughs, initially look like they're higher than traditional advertising. I agree with whoever commented that the motivation of that buyer might be a little bit different. Someone that clicks on a banner ad is probably more inclined to buy from you than someone that just finds a funny video and wants to see more of them. But the question is, it really becomes a numbers game. And if you can get a lot of traffic, and if you can get a lot of fairly high percentage of those people coming back to your site, there's always a way to monetize that traffic, either in the form of some kind of even just something basic like a newsletter or actually selling a product or service. And that's sort of the second phase of this experiment is we're going to actually try to understand if we can monetize these people. From a branding perspective, it seemed to be pretty effective. Sorry, go ahead, Flynn.
No, that's good, Charlie. I think you've done a splendid job as well on this first phase of research. There is much more coming. Some of you are asking about the PowerPoint. Every one of you that have registered for this conference should be a subscriber of our journal. I think you're automatically a subscriber. It's part of being part of the conference. You have to be to attend the conference. And so you should get the full report. It's we use this your feedback to improve it a final time, and then within the next 7 days, it'll be released. You should get it in your email. Watch for it. Make sure your filters are not stopping you from getting journal issues. If you haven't received a journal issue in the last 8 weeks, something's wrong. You should receive 2 this month from us, plus a summary report each month, and every one of them is the results from our various experiments. And so watch for that, and you'll have all of this, plus more information that we didn't actually talk about at this time. I want to point out for you also that we're going to be doing a series of clinics on this subject as we glean more information. And I think that if you have good ideas for how you'd like us to conduct research, key issues, please chat with us as we close this. Take a few moments and chat your ideas in, and do me one more favor. The best way for me to know if we're doing something here that's helping you is to invite you to please send us a note and tell us if you found this helpful. All of these conferences are free. We're not selling you anything. We just want the community of marketers to work together to solve some of these issues. So with your input, we'll do a better job of planning our tests so that they're relevant to your needs. And also with your comments about this presentation, it will help us to know if you found it worth the time that you invested. We're grateful for your trust. We're going to keep working hard. And I want to especially thank Jalali Hartman for once again putting together a fascinating research project. Thank you. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another clinic just like this. Watch our site so you can register for that also. By the way, I'm watching all these responses that are coming in. I have 6 monitors in front of me. Yes, I do. And we will print everything you say here, and then we'll literally go through the log and study your comments so that we can make the next issue better and we can get the next clinic better. Thank you again. We'll talk to you next week.